the G20 summit today in the midst of the trade war. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. It's the big group of 20 summit in Argentina, and President Trump is already there. Given the trade war, it's a time of great turbulence for the international system. The BBC's Daniel Gallas is in Buenos Aires covering the summit. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning.
You just talked to the head of the World Trade Organization. He sees his world in crisis?
Yes, he told me this is for him the worst crisis in international trade since 1947. Basically, the world's been trying to move forward with free trade, and that's the opposite moment that we're living with this U.S. and China trade wars. So every leader, everyone has something at stake here in this meeting.
And the WTO head, Mr. Acevedo, he suggested to you that some countries are developing a kind of alternate track, a plan B, if the World Trade Organization system is somehow undermined?
Yes. Well, the problem with the World Trade Organization right now is that the U.S. is blocking the nomination of judges. And that's pretty much the core business of the WTO, which is settling trade disputes between countries. And what Mr. Acevedo told me was that the member countries are trying to find a solution that does not involve the United States. But what he says is that if there is such a plan B, then any dispute settlement with the United States will be compromised because it won't be part of that body.
So this big summit's underway. Do you expect new deals to emerge given that President Trump's big meeting with Chinese President Xi is tomorrow?
Everyone's sort of expecting what will happen to these trade wars between China and the United States. But the big meeting itself is after the G20. So how much really can we expect from this multilateral deal before those two countries agree on what they have to say?
Okay. Daniel Gallas, the BBC South America business correspondent in Buenos Aires. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In the old Mercury, Gemini, Apollo days, NASA designed the rockets and private contractors built the pieces. On the moon rocket, Boeing built the first stage. The lunar module was a company now known as Northrop Grumman. Now NASA wants to go back to the moon, but the private sector will have a deeper role. Yesterday, NASA announced that 9 aerospace companies, including Lockheed Martin, will develop the spacecraft and technology to get back to the moon. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
NASA has long contracted with major U.S. aerospace companies to help develop and build spacecraft. But in recent years, the business model has shifted in a big way, says Alan Boyle at GeekWire.
NASA is putting more of the risk on commercial ventures.
The commercial partners will develop their own spacecraft to get NASA's payloads and those of other customers into space. Boyle says it's like NASA's
just buying the ride instead of paying to build the airplane.
To make a profit, the companies will also depend on private space ventures like satellite launches, resource extraction, or space tourism. As for getting humans to the moon or Mars, Henry Hertzfeld at George Washington University's Space Policy Institute says that's for the longer term.
The decision that we want to put people up there has been made, but can we bring them back alive?
NASA's currently researching key challenges to manned spaceflight, like access to water and exposure to radiation. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Marketplace goes beyond day-to-day business reporting to cover the big picture of the economy. We provide context and depth to connect the news to decisions that we all have to make, and we work very hard every day to ensure that our journalism is accurate and worthy of your trust. We don't do this work alone. We're counting on you to help. Become a Marketplace investor today in whatever amount you choose, and your donation will go twice as far, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate today at marketplace.org.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
We were talking about the G20 meeting just now where the NAFTA overhaul is expected to get signed by the leaders of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. A new Mexican president takes office tomorrow as part of our coverage of this political handover. A story now about Andrés Manuel López Obrador's plans for Mexico's polluted, congested capital, including moving government offices out. KJZZ Public Radio sent reporter Jorge Valencia an hour and a half commute he took.
It's a little after 3 p.m. And Karen Viridiana Rodriguez is speed walking to the bus stop. Rodriguez has just gotten off work from Mexico's culture ministry. We swipe our cards to get on the metro bus. And so begins a commute to Rodriguez's home that'll take us on two buses, a short walk, and a cab ride. She's one of about 740,000 federal workers who could be relocated. So would she want to live in a smaller, more manageable city? Everything would change, she says. And not necessarily in a good way. She doesn't want to take her kids out of their schools. But Mexico's incoming president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, wants to move all federal government agencies out of Mexico City, starting with the one where Rodriguez works. Alejandro Curi likes the idea. He's president of Mexico's National Association of Realtors.
They will need new houses. They will need rentals. They will need a lot of services that the real estate industry will provide.
Some question whether the incoming administration's plans will effectively reduce traffic and pollution in the capital. Dolores Franco is president of the Urbanist College of Mexico. She also wonders whether smaller cities like Querétaro, 100 miles north of the capital, can handle the population influx.
I don't know if Querétaro, for example, has the housing rate that they need in order to receive all these people. I don't know.
Also, Franco says there was a minor culture clash when the federal government moved some offices to the smaller city of Aguascalientes some 30 years ago. Franco says many outside of Mexico City don't love their compatriots from the capital that much.
They say that we are, you know, so rude, so stupid persons, but we are not like that.
In the meantime, Karen Viridiana Rodriguez, the office worker from the Culture Ministry, says she will continue her commute to and from work, even if it is 90 minutes each way. In Mexico City, I'm Jorge Valencia for Marketplace.
It has been 12 days, and Nissan and Renault chairman Carlos Ghosn is still in jail in Japan amid allegations of financial misdeeds. This is about Ghosn and his accounting, but also about France being seen as trying to take too much control of the French-Japanese alliance that put Renault, Nissan, and Mitsubishi together. The French are supposed to take this up with the Japanese at the G20 going on now in Argentina. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.